Many thanks to David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal. Check out that podcast. He joins us every week here on the Local Hour. As a special gift, Dan Le Batard also joining us here on this week's episode. Back again, back to back. Enjoy whenever Dan makes the time to join us here on the David Sampson Show. David, historic weekend, not just for the Miami Marlins, but for the sport of baseball. Derek Jeter has named his Michael Hill replacement, and it's Kim Ng, the first female GM of a Major League Baseball club and a professional sports franchise here in the United States. Your takeaway from Kim Ng being named GM.
I've had the worst struggle this week because the people at CBS were insistent that I talk about this because of my past with the Marlins. And so I did. I spent a lot of time on Nothing Personal talking about it. And I came super close to explaining what really happened, but I haven't gone all the way.
Well, this is the place to do it because I can imagine your conundrum, right? This is being universally applauded, this entire move. But I thought of you fairly immediately because you've sort of been boxed in. Anything that you say that questions whether or not this is a power position.
He's literally rolling up his sleeves right now.
He is rolling up his sleeves on a pink dress shirt because he's ready to give away the goods. So explain this to us because it's hard for you to be in a position where you don't sound embittered or whatever or axe to grind if you have anything that questions a decision that's being universally applauded across baseball, sports, and really outside of sports.
Everywhere. So let's talk about the macro point here. The Marlins made a great PR hire. That's the bottom line. And I'm really happy for Kim. If she knows what she got herself into, which she doesn't, I'm really happy for baseball because they get to use the narrative that there's now a woman GM. And for people in the regular world, like the national TV shows and the Clintons, Chelsea Clinton and everybody else, get to say, oh my God, progress. I just want to, and please understand one thing. And I don't normally caveat on this show. This is not about me saying that women should not be in a position of power in baseball, because they should. This is not me saying that I'm upset that a woman was hired, because I'm not. I think it's great. It's me trying to explain to your listeners something that they're not going to get anywhere else. And I don't give a shit. I'm going to just say it. The hire by Derek Jeter was straight eyewash. Bottom line. And if Kim knows going in, then I'm okay. But if she was somehow bamboozled into thinking that she's going to have the power to actually be a baseball decision maker for a Major League Baseball team, she's just not. That team is run by Derek Jeter and Gary Denbo, period, hard stop. Kim is really good administratively, and Denbo can't do it, and Jeter can't do it. And this is not me being bitter. This is a fact. This is what Mike Hill did. They fire a black guy, and they bring in a woman, and that makes baseball happy. It makes Bruce Sherman happy because he needs things from baseball, like revenue sharing in 2021 going forward. Lots of it. So there's a lot of layers to this onion that no one's ever willing to discuss, Dan and Mike, and why not tell your listeners the truth?
Well, we're going to discuss it here because that is something that people aren't going to hear anywhere else. And I would say it's probably going to end up being controversial just because you're not hearing anyone question or ask any hard questions about this. Now, she is credentialed, okay? She has the resume to merit that position. But when you say it's eyewash, and when you say if she knows what she has gotten herself into, you are uniquely qualified to know, not just because you've worked in that job, but Mike Hill is a close friend of yours. So you know the job he just got out of. So explain to us what she's gotten into.
So if you're a general manager, there's several types of general managers out there these days in baseball. You know, there's president of baseball operations and general managers. Theo Epstein is an example, was a president of baseball operations. Jed Hauer was his GM, and now Theo's out and Jed has been promoted. What a president of baseball operations does is leads scouting, leads player development, leads pro scouting, leads international, and leads the major league team. Works closely with the owner, informing the owner, here's where our roster is, here's what we're thinking about doing in terms of call-ups, in terms of the draft, in terms of where certain players are going to be at what level of the minor leagues. Here are the trades that we're thinking to get to the payroll that you, Mr. Owner or Mrs. Owner, have given us. On top of that, there's running the baseball business. That's a huge budget side of a company. That is the job of what you and everybody else says, oh, you're the GM, that's what you do. But with the Marlins, that's not the case. With the Marlins, Gary Denbo is in charge of where every minor league player plays. Gary Denbo is in charge of all of scouting, all of pro scouting, all of development, and doesn't answer to the GM, period. No matter what they tell you, Gary Denbo works directly with Jeter. What Gary Denbo can't do is the business side of it, which Kim is incredibly qualified to do. Now, Kim was at Major League Baseball since 2011. Having her out of Major League Baseball's central office is very good for baseball, because what it means is that they have gotten a woman or any person of color comes into this category. And when you are a woman or person of color in baseball, there is a study that's done for Central Baseball that is a minority inclusion percentage workers study. Baseball is always looking to get better numbers because it's good PR. They get to do a press release that says, we've got 40% women and 50% people of color. But they're also looking to cut expenses, and they're also looking to get people of color and women onto teams, because that's the PR that you guys use in the mainstream media. You say, look, there's 4 black GMs, there's 2 black head coaches or managers. You use those stats. So getting Kim onto a team means they get to say there's another minority GM, and that is a great PR.
Even though you're telling us she's not the GM, she's going to be on the business side.
Her title is GM. So to the world, she's the GM. That's why she's on Good Morning America. That's why she's getting all these interviews. And that's why baseball gets to say, if Mike Hill gets another job running one of these teams, then baseball gets to say there's been an increase in the number of diverse candidates who are running teams. Because regular people who don't listen to the show, of which there aren't many, but regular people just look at the stats that's given out in terms of the total number. Now, please understand, and you can edit this, cut this however you want, this is not about Kim. Kim has paid her dues. Kim has interviewed. Kim has never been put in this position before. Of course she was going to take it, because 50 years from now, she goes down in history as the first woman GM. But she happens to be working for a particular team where she has no chance to actually be the de facto GM.
So what was Derek Jeter's pitch, do you think? Was he transparent about what's going on there in the front office, according to David Sampson?
It took 2 seconds to make the pitch, right? You go to Kim, and this is done in conjunction with Major League Baseball, by the way. This is not something that Derek Jeter just thought of, like it fell from the sky. This was a totally calculated move, which is what Derek does. He's been doing calculated moves since he was a player, and this is not bitter. Everyone knows this. So if I'm in Derek's position, I make the exact same hire. It is the perfect hire. I complimented him on Nothing Personal, because it really is the perfect hire. Look at all the attention the Marlins are getting.
Good attention. Rare,
positive.
Rare, good attention.
Say it again, Dan.
Rare, good attention.
It is both rare and great. It was the perfect, perfect hire. I just want to make sure, and I have no way to know what Kim was told. If Kim spoke to Mike Hill, she went eyes wide open. If Kim spoke to anyone around baseball about how Derek runs the Marlins with Gary, then she went in eyes wide open. But if I'm Kim and I have the responsibility of all women that's been on my shoulders for the last 20 years, of course I'm going to take this job, because I am able to then open the door, hopefully, for other women to be hired up the chain and grow and to be GMs.
Mike, Jeter really checkmated all of Sampson's.
Yeah.
He just checkmated him, because there's no way, no matter how logical it is, no matter how fact-based what he's saying is, it's going to be white executive criticizes hire, is the only one to criticize hire.
No.
And
I'm not criticizing the hire. I'm explaining it.
I know, but what I'm telling you is, what you know how these things work, David.
Yeah.
You call it eyewash, like, and you explained it with all the context that was necessary. And I know that you're informed on this.
And you touted her qualifications.
And you bent over backwards saying that this is not about her, but you know how this stuff works. You know how this game works.
I'm not playing a game. I'm trying to add value to your audience in on a platform that you're nice enough to give me every week and that I'm nice enough to give you every week, and just trying to inform the audience. This is great for women. There's no doubt about it. And Kim is terrific, by the way. Look how she's handled all the PR. She's done all the interviews. But take a look at the things that she's doing. She's playing that part, which is exactly what the Marlins wanted. It's what baseball needed. It's really good for baseball. And if you ask the commissioner, and he doesn't lie to you, he would say the exact same thing.
But Dave, it's so strange because you're straddling the line with the facts that you're using on almost sounding like it's a token hire. And you're the executive who, mm-hmm. you know, formerly of the Marlins. Mike, he's been checkmated here, right? There's no the publicity of the move. There's no way to move around it.
I think he's doing his best to explain it. And I want to jump off of that. You mentioned previously that if she spoke to Mike Hill, she'd go into this job with eyes wide open. While you explained in great detail Mike Hill's possible frustration with the situation coming to an end with the Marlins, you've never really described what Michael Hill's absolute power was within the Marlins. You always mentioned that Jeter wasn't whoever he would hire as a replacement because that was inevitable. He wasn't really going to cede power. It would just be increased power for Derek Jeter. So what was the power dynamic with Michael Hill in that front office?
So let's be clear on this. According to Jeter, everything good that happened with the Marlins was because of Derek and Gary. And that may be true or false, because there's no doubt they have moved a ton of money. There's no doubt that they have a great young pitching and they've got some position players who could end up great. They were over 500 for the first time since 2009. I spent the last seven years of my career not being able to win 80 games, and they won 31 games. So whatever they do is currently working for the moment. But according to Derek, it's all him and not Mike Hill. But I just happen to know differently, which is all of the transactions that were done were Mike Hill generated. The ability to trade away money the way he did with Stanton, which is, by the way, the greatest trade in history. The fact that he got Stanton traded to the Yankees will go down in history as franchise saving because of the money situation with the ownership. But in terms of, you are either Jeter's guy or you're not. And Jeter did not ever, ever embrace anyone or anything from the previous regime because he assumed they were all poisoned and they all didn't know what they were doing. And this went on the business side and the baseball side. So everybody felt they were outsiders. And so if you're not inside Jeter's small, tiny circle, which is Gary and Caroline, then you're simply not, you're not in the room where it happens.
I follow what you're saying, but I sort of want to get down to brass tacks. Like, who has final say within that organization? Everything has to be run through Derek Jeter?
And what are brass tacks? When we get down to brass tacks, why are we getting down to the brass tacks? Because I've heard that expression before. I have no idea why we'd be getting down to brass tacks, but get down to them.
I always picture them as thumbtacks, and I always picture that as painful. Why would you want to get down onto brass tacks? Because it would hurt. So I think it's a terrible expression, actually.
Final say, though.
Yeah, so final say is Jeter and Dembo. Hard stop. Hard stop.
And what can you tell us, without betraying any confidences, about how frustrated Mike Hill was about the power not really being real when you've got veto power above you?
I think all GMs and presidents of baseball ops have that to a degree when you have an owner. I think that, and Mike's been used to that because a lot of that happened with the Marlins as well under Jeffrey. Jeffrey had people who he listened to far more than Larry or Mike or me. He had a group of people close to him, some who worked for the team, some who didn't, who had great influence over him. And many owners have that. Jeffrey's not alone. Derek's not alone. So again, paint this however you want. Publicize it however you want. People will listen or they won't. Derek is not alone in this. He's not a monster for doing this. this is how many people work in baseball. But it's important to know whether you're on the inside of that decision tree or the outside.
Can you help us understand when you talk about the Stanton contract and you say it's the best trade in the history of baseball? Explain to me what happens exactly if Stanton can't be moved. If that contract can't be moved, what are the ramifications? Let's just assume he's still on the team.
Then he's at a payroll of $33 million. He's making $32 million, and the team total payroll is 65 or 70, and they have no chance to win 31 out of 60 games. And by the way, that's the threat that Mike Hill used on Giancarlo when he turned down the Cardinals deal and the Giants deal. He called up Giancarlo and said, listen, you want to exercise your no trade clause, which I'm so regretful of giving. It's the only one we ever gave in 18 years. If you, on a multi-year deal, if you don't accept a trade, it's going to be you and 24 first-time minor league players making the minimum. Totally up to you, but we're going to trade everyone you hang out with. Everyone, and you're going to be sitting here as miserable because you have no chance.
And that ruins the franchise because they just lose a lot?
Because they lose a lot, then they don't get what they have now, which is, in theory, the beginning of momentum. Remember, this next season, there's no more important season since 2012 in Marlins history is the 2021 season. Because over 162 games, if it turns out that 20 was just an asterisk, an aberration, because it was only 60 games, then they're right back into the crap the way we used to be. So this is critical. And if they still had Stanton at $32 million, they would have no chance to be winning.
All right, so the etymology of brass tacks, there's a hardware store origin that seems a little far-fetched, but I like the ones from the Old West. There's two. So one possibility is there was a practice in the 19th century where brass tacks were used to spell out the initials of the deceased on top of a coffin. I don't really understand how that context applies to how I used it, but it seems pretty badass, doesn't it, Dan? And then there's another one because brass could be easily polished and didn't rust, that the practice of adorning one's gun stock with brass tacks. So when you get down to the brass tacks of cleaning your gun,
that
was the easy part, but that was really the core of cleaning.
I'm glad we got down to brass tacks.
That's really awesome. When you think of someone like from the Old West in movies, who's the first person you think of right now?
Just Sam Elliott.
Clint Eastwood.
I think of Kevin Klein.
Why?
That's
from Wild Wild West?
From In-N-Out?
What? From the Spider movie with Will Smith? That's what you have so little experience with Westerns that Kevin Klein from a terrible Will Smith Spider vehicle? Mike's got a great story about that. Have you ever told Samson the Spider
this
backstory?
This is according to the documentary, the fan source documentary that Kevin Smith was a part of that detailed the failed Tim Burton Superman film that would star Nicolas Cage as Clark Kent Superman. And there was a Warner Brothers movie exec that would sign off on the film and give it a massive budget. The budget required, as long as there was a spider put in the movie. There was a big fight scene with the spider. You look at the canon of Superman comics, there really isn't a spider villain to choose from. So they would just create this villain to appease this Hollywood exec that has a thing for spiders. So that movie fails, never gets off the ground. Wild Wild West appears, and there's a tentpole summer movie that needs a spider as a villain. So Kenneth Branagh, his villain, Artemis or something, whatever. No, I think that's Kevin Kline's. Either way, the villain in Wild Wild West has a giant mechanical spider, even though that technology really doesn't seem to exist in the Wild West, but that's why there's a confusing giant spider in that film.
Wow. These movie execs, man, they've got their weird proclivities.
David, I think I've told you this before, and one of the best books I've ever read in terms of stunning me, and I've got to find the title to the book because it's about how a couple of movie producers not bilked Sony Pictures out of many millions of dollars, but the stories in there are unbelievable, and one of them, because movie executives in Hollywood can be just super dopey. One of them involves, I always get this confused, whether it's the sidekick of the owner of the Golden State Warriors, who was also Barbara Streisand's hairdresser, and he became an executive producer in Hollywood.
Peter Goober?
I think that's the name. That's yes, the one. I read the book like 20 years ago, so forgive me for not having the details. But Mike, if you can find the title of that, I think the audience would like it too. But one of the stories in that book that I'm just sitting there reading it with my mouth open was that guy, Gruber, coming on to, not the Warriors owner, whoever it is that the sidekick was to these two producers.
Is it Hit and Run?
God, I don't know. All right, forgive my ignorance.
I mean, the title of the book is Hit and Run, How John Peters and Peter Gruber Took Sony for a Ride in Hollywood.
That's it. That's the book, yes. And in the book, David, one of the stories
now available in paperback
is David's going to want to read this book for sure. As interested as he is in business and Hollywood, is you've got this guy, this producer clown Peters, coming onto the set of Rain Man and having seen some screenings and whatnot, seeing portion of the movie and just like sort of clapping his hands saying, hey, it's great. Love it entirely. But can we get the, and then slur for slow person, to throw out the, at the end of the movie, the winning pitch at Dodger Stadium? Can we get, you know, Dustin Hoffman's character at the end of the movie? Yes, you see him, right? Yes, that's correct. That's why you're going to love the book, David, because of that stupid story. Things like that in there where you're like, how the hell did Sony give these guys money?
So obviously it didn't get in the movie, by the way.
No, it's a shame.
He didn't win. No. I just did a Rain Man scene on Nothing Personal yesterday. So it's pretty funny you bring that up because I'm not sure you would have had the time nor the inclination nor the interest to take 45 minutes of your day. But I did I recreated a Rain Man scene with Theo and trying to decide whether he wanted to spend a year playing in the sandbox with his children and give up $10 million or run the Mets and get an ownership piece under Steve Cohen.
I appreciate the setup because I do want to ask you about Theo, but I have one last Jeter question before we get there. What exactly is the nature of Jeter's contract? Because I think the end game here for Derek Jeter is always to be a principal owner. What outs does he have? He's not going to lose any money on this endeavor because he's an owner in title, really, because he's paying himself a salary which covers his investment in the franchise. What can you tell us about his future with this franchise?
This is year four coming up. So he's got 2 years left on his deal. It's a five-year deal to be the operator of the team. And the question is, will the board, it's owned by Bruce Sherman, and then he's got a bunch of co-owners, they have a board, are they satisfied with the direction of the team? Because the reason why Jeter was in this position is because Bruce Sherman simply just loved him, literally genuflected in his general direction, gave him a blank check, do whatever you want, didn't question anything, wasn't involved, nothing. But the rest of the board, when they get letters saying, hey, you got to put more money in, hey, we got to put more money in, hey, there's no naming rights, hey, there's no TV deal, hey, God, we're in trouble here. The question is, will they re-sign Jeter and will he want to keep doing this job? It's not a particularly cushy job what Jeter does, right? Running a team is not all that fun. It's way more fun to own the team outright and then not have to come into the office.
Have others run it. Have others do the bullshit, the dirty stuff.
Exactly. So I just don't think, I don't know if Jeter's going to want to do it. And by the way, here's how the exit will go. It will not be that the board fires Jeter. It will not be, the PR of it will be very simple. It'll be Jeter looking at the camera and saying, I want to spend more time with my family. I've got young kids. I want to step aside. But that narrative won't be true.
All right, so I appreciate you getting that out of the way. Now let's talk about Theo. Theo, surprising to some, not to those that follow, your good friend Jeff Passan said this wasn't at all a surprise. Theo stepping down from his role with the Chicago Cubs. A lot of people sort of linking him to the Mets. Some people theorizing that he may actually indeed take a year off. Your spin?
He's not going to take a year off. You don't give up $10 million of salary just because you're tired or grumpy. This was all planned, all calculated. Theo Epstein made a decision to leave the Cubs that was completely premeditated. He's not going to leave $10 million on the table without a plan. And when Steve Cohen finished the transaction with the Mets, it became obvious that Theo needed to get into the free agent game. And Ricketts' family, owner of the Cubs, were happy to get his salary off the books and bring up Jed Hoyer to do the job. No problem. Theo was happy to be a free agent, quote unquote, and whether he signs with the Mets officially or not for this season so he can claim I didn't lie and I did take the year off, he will be intimately involved with.
Oh, wow. So you're saying it ain't family. This is baseball and business. He saw that there's a guy out there who came in as a swinging dick, and he's like, I'm giving the good press conference. And now all of a sudden Theo saw that and is like, I got to get into free agency, because if that guy's bidding with others, I'm going to get my salary up. It's that cold.
It's not just salary. He wants ownership. And then he wants to be after that commissioner. Like, he's got a full plan in his life. And he can't keep being with the Cubs, worrying about Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber. He already won the World Series with the Cubs. He could go to another team like the Mets and have the trifecta and go into Hall of Fame as an executive.
Commissioner. And I hadn't heard that. Have you heard that, Mike?
No, I wanted to seize on that after commissioner. David finishes.
You say he wants to be commissioner.
You know, one of the rules is very simple. If you ever want to be commissioner of baseball, you do not let it be known to anybody that you have aspirations to be the commissioner of baseball. You just don't do it.
Well, how do you know?
Because
an excellent question, Mike. Mike, such a good question. That's right. Don't let anybody know. How does David Sampson know?
There is no one who is on the inside of baseball who does not feel the same way, except for the fact that no one talks about it publicly. When you are around Theo, it is just sort of one of those things. There's a bunch of executives in baseball who have said and have made it clear. The reason people sometimes do not survive baseball is that the commissioner says, wow, you want to be commissioner? See you later. You're out of baseball. So if you take a look at executives who have left, many of them have left because their path to commissionership has been snipped like a 9-day-old Jewish young boy.
I would put Theo Epstein as commissioner right now. If I'm baseball, I don't know who would hire somebody to replace Manfred or how that would work, but I would take him on as commissioner right now.
Well, Dan,
why would he do that though? It pays
I'll
less
tell
than
you how to do it.
It would pay less than what he gets.
First of all, it pays less. That's funny, except the power's more. And the power's an aphrodisiac in that position. But the fact is that if he could do a coup, remember how Faye Vincent used to be the commissioner of baseball?
Yes.
Faye Vincent got disappeared because the owner said, we don't want Faye to be commissioner anymore. So they got together and made Bud Selig the interim commissioner, one of their own owners. So you can do a coup, but you need 23 votes to do a coup. There are not 23 owners who would remove Rob and install anybody. Forget Theo, anybody. Theo's best chance is to get an ownership piece. That's a logical next step. Not to be commissioner, become a part owner of a team, get a World Series with that team, and then 10 years from now, start worrying about the next step.
It's interesting because you could absolutely see a path to it. It's harder to fire an owner than it is a GM, even though Theo Epstein is not one of these interchangeable parts that can just be replaced and you're out of baseball. There's always going to be an owner that wants to chase a title that's going to bring in the best ever.
Theo is Rick Pitino or Larry Brown. Is how he's looked at within baseball.
A mercenary?
That's a word. That is such a pejorative connotation. I don't use that word for that.
But that's what I think of when I think of Pitino and Larry Brown. I think of guys who are nomadic for a variety of different reasons. One of them can be impatient, but they're a name you hire if you want to immediately polish your stuff. So he's a PR mercenary.
If you see, I would give Theo way more credit than that. Theo's someone you hire when you want to win a World Series and you promised your fans you're going to win one within 3 to 5 years. But you know Theo's not going to be there for 5 to 10 years.
That fits exactly one Major League Baseball team.
What
right
will
now.
The Mets pay him, do you imagine? The Mets, because if he gives that press conference, I wonder if there's a direct correlation between Theo watching that Mets press conference and saying, hey, get my ass out of here, like right now, because I got an owner right here who would absolutely want to make the splash of hiring me for $15 million.
And David.
No, you're off, Dan. He knew this before. No one learned anything during the press conference of Steve Cohen except the fans.
Mm.
Everyone knew what Steve Cohen wanted. Steve Cohen had made it clear throughout the process of buying the team that he was interested in a GM or a president of baseball ops like Theo. This was not a secret within the industry by any stretch.
Does Theo,
so Theo's not watching the press conferences saying, "Oh my God, I've got the best idea.
I like my way better.
I'm going to resign right now. Look at the press conference. I'm resigning." No, that's not how it actually works in real life.
Do you think he follows the Jeter template of I'll have an ownership percentage, but you'll pay me a salary that covers my investment?
You better believe it.
That's interesting. Well, let's stay on the Mets a little bit because Robinson Cano just got suspended for an entire season as a repeat offender, violator of Major League Baseball's performance enhancer policy. Steve Cohen, fist pump?
Oh, my God. Everyone's so happy with the Mets organization. I'm doing a whole segment on today. Nothing personal about this because I want to do the dance that was done and then talk about the statement that Sandy Alderson made, which was such an absolute joke. Because the reality is they were thrilled. Robinson Cano is so overpaid. Think about how happy Jeter would be if Wei-Yin Chen had done steroids. That's the equivalent.
Yeah, they saved $24 million.
So they're not going to save it. So that's another misstatement. They're not saving 24. They get to reallocate the 24. That is the most important part of making the team better.
I want to also ask you about the vaccine developments and Major League Baseball's role in this. Everyone says it's going to go to first responders first and then essential workers. Rob Manfred, obviously commissioners were on the call
with
the White House.
What was that look on David's face?
I don't want to betray what happened.
That was skepticism. That was no, but I've never seen such profound skepticism on his face. He's not buying that one either. That's PR too.
I had a eureka moment last night when watching Adam Silver get interviewed. Oh, the leagues are going to get this first.
I don't know about no. Let's not create yet more early headlines.
Okay.
And say first.
Okay,
let's
earlier just than say, earlier yeah. than most.
But before the sick. That's problematic. That's a PR crisis there. That the league, if the first person to get this is LeBron James,
but if the first person is Kim Ng, then we're good.
Oh God. Listen, the power of sports as an economic driver in the U.S. and as a way for our country to feel good is not to be underestimated. And the commissioners of the leagues take that power out for a walk from time to time.
And what's going to happen
yes.
here?
So
what's
go- yes.
what's going to happen here?
It is critical for it's not it is critical for players to get vaccinated and their families. And the support staff and anyone in contact with players, it's critical.
But it's critical for money reasons. It's not critical for humane and decent and moral reasons.
Oh, Dan, you're so smart. Look at how sad you are. Can you imagine when decisions are made by a company for money reasons? What kind of company would ever do that?
I know, but the country isn't supposed to be a company. I understand what's happened with corporate America and everything else in terms of running our government, but the country is not supposed to be a company.
I mean, if it is, it's going out of business. Do you
have any music you can play, Mike, can you play some really nice music like from an Ang Lee movie like Brokeback Mountain?
Not royalty free. Not royalty free music, but you could do a lot of good with that money that they're gonna get from their network partners, Dan. You could do a lot of good. And the montage of how they brought America together at opening day is going to be amazing.
It's unbelievable. It's that crass. I guess it is that crass, right? If baseball's going to crawl to the finish line to get to its money and its mutated season, then why not elevate the crassness to a place of I've got to make sure.
You know that people with money.
I've got to make sure that Jesus Aguilar gets his vaccine before grandma does. Like, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
What's unbelievable to me is you acting like you've just had an epiphany.
I'm like watching that press conference that Theo Epstein was watching that Cohen gave. I'm like, I can't believe that the country is run like a company and that we're going to go out of our way to make sure that Martin Prado gets the vaccine before somebody else does.
No, he's retired. He's not eligible.
Oh, really? You sure they're not gonna grandfather him in? Yeah. They're not gonna give it to minor leaguers or people who have dedicated service, just people who could play shortstop right now?
Nick Markakis gets it before
good minor leaguers.
Nick Markakis gets it before North Dakota. apparently. David, let's get to your review this week. Every week you do a review for us here on the Local Hour. Make sure to support David with his podcast. It's a good podcast, nothing personal. What is on deck for this week?
Hold on a second. So Miguel Rojas is going to get the vaccine before Abuela.
That's like the game that you're playing. That's we're going to keep trying to pull random names.
You can't do it that way because it's not just by the way, we have created an editor's dream during this show because you could screw me so hard. But keep in mind, I'm entering into free agency here. So I'd ask you not to, because I did not say that baseball players specifically are going to be the only ones to get vaccines. That's what you're now trying to do.
You didn't say that, but this
is the national show.
No, you didn't say that, but this is what's funny about what just happened during this Nothing Personal. And they're all great. I'm sorry, not this Nothing Personal 2.0, because what we're doing around here with David Sampson, the information every time is like your mouth hangs open in terms of how good what we're talking about is. And I want to get into this other stuff, but you're actually relaxed around this. The earlier 30 minutes of this is as careful as I've ever heard you speak publicly. Like, you were being cautious around a couple of the things, but this is the one that's going to get you in trouble. The one that you're laughing about as America gets sick.
Well, because there's going to be a headline. Fernando Rodney gets vaccine before grandma.
No, he's a free agent. He has to make a team.
Wait a minute. You're not going to get the vaccine if you're a valuable free agent? You just said that minor leaguers who are valuable are going to get it.
That's because they're associated with the team.
Okay, so Matt Joyce is going to get it. Matt Joyce is going to get the vaccine.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Matt
Time.
Joyce.
Stop the show. Why did you just come up with Matt Joyce?
Is he also? Because they're funny. That's the game me and Mike are playing. Yeah.
I'm presently upset Kevin Kuzminoff hasn't played in 6 years.
We're just playing funny names. The idea of Abuela being sick and needing the vaccine, and you look up and it's Prince Fielder because he's still on contract with the Brewers, even though he hasn't played in 3 years. But he's, you know, well, actually, Prince, it's okay because he's heavy and it might be a dangerous position.
I got to be honest. I haven't heard a word any of you two have said for the last 3 minutes. I'm just looking up random baseball names.
There's so many. Oh, my God. You guys are funny. That's going to be good. By the way, it's NBA, too, and NFL, might I add. So you can come up with a million NBA players. John Konkak will have access to a vaccine.
Wow. Oh, no, he will not. He's been retired for 20 years, although that is also funny. David, the whole birth of this show, I would say, Mike, this is accurate, is playing this game. Like, just fooling around, just trying to top each other with this particular game. It is the first seeds of this show. Let's review your movie here, because I've got a million steroid questions I want to ask you, but we'll do that next week.
Yeah, we got to talk about what happened with Cano. I mean, it's...
I just can't imagine how much interesting stuff you have there. But, Mike, we don't have time anymore, right?
I was actually texting with Dan when we discussed him coming in, and I've had as my ripcord for several months... I want to talk about the congressional hearings, the Balco scandal with David Sampson. His perspective as someone in baseball would have been fantastic, but it keeps being a fascinating interview, and I have so many paths to follow with David.
That's what happened here. So next week, just put steroids in the calendar.
Because you never know. There could be a second female GM in Major League Baseball.
All right, well, then review your movie so we could get out of here.
I just want to tell people to watch a show. I touched on it on yesterday's show. On Nothing Personal, but I want to repeat it. It's a TV show I found called Friends from College.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's funny.
With Fred Savage, with Key, and with Kobe Smulders, who is the beautiful woman from Avengers. It is a very difficult show to watch because it is funny, like out loud funny, and it is tragic and sad, not in terms of people getting run over by a car and all of a sudden dying in a plane crash. It is what happens to a group of college friends when some of them get married, some of them are having affairs, some of them know about it, some of them don't know about it, and what can creep in to a very close unit. And it is written beautifully.
It's
and
a great
smartly.
Show. It is a really great show, and it doesn't get enough attention either. Like, it's not one of those shows that gets buzz, but it's an interesting watch for all the reasons Dave mentioned.
Yeah, so I finished season one, and I watched the first four episodes of season two, and season two gets quite a bit darker, but not in terms of all of a sudden someone you know, gets run over by a car, in terms of the fallout when people discover what had been going on in their lives. It is very interesting. I still haven't figured out why it only had two seasons. It is sometimes hard to watch Fred Savage because for me, he's the Wonder Years. For me, he's Princess Bride, but he's really good in this. And I don't know that he made it as an adult actor, although I guess by being in the show, he actually has. So if you have time, Friends from College, it's a 30-minute episodes, 8 per season, well worth your time.
Our library of stuff around here that is meant as a menu item, you should check out South Beach Sessions with Mike Schur on the subject of Netflix, because David was just confused by why it is that there would only be 2 seasons of that. And Netflix is doing some stuff with how they pour money into things where they are just trying to see what a demo is. It's not really for the value of the artistic content. Ozark is about to end here after a couple of seasons. It's been wildly successful. Popular shows leave Netflix because they get all the information that they need about the demographics of the show, according to Mike Schur, who's a big Hollywood showrunner.
Ozark was canceled?
Well, it's got 2 seasons left, but they're done with it. They've announced that they're done with it. And well, when I say 2 seasons, it's actually going to be 1 season that's 2 seasons long. But yes, yeah. Ozark was canceled, and that happens a good amount with Netflix popular shows.
I think I also prefer this sort of way. Remember in the past, if there was a show that was popular, it would hang around for 20 years. I mean, Grey's Anatomy is still going on. And then,
Dexter is coming back because they got the ending wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Sons of Anarchy is another show that was really good early on, but then it was popular and it just hung on a little too long. I like going into a series saying, this is really going to be 2 or 3 seasons max, or I even like miniseries. We got a story to tell and we're out onto the next project.
I'm both happy and sad to hear that's how it works, because if I knew in advance, like with Schitt's Creek, it's 6 seasons and it ended on top, and Friends from College may do the same. I'm not upset with Netflix. I just wonder if they're not interested. What you said that bothered me is they're not interested in the artistic quality of the show. They're interested in the information they glean from the
David, now who's the naive one? David, I'm naive because the country's a company. Hollywood's not in it for the creativity. They're a business. It's not the fantasy world you think.
Are you speaking like a member of the mafia?
We should make one correction. They prefer the shows to be good because they like going to the parties
and the awards. They like the awards. They like
they like the awards that get them into the parties.
That's right. Yes. Hollywood, baby.
I'm despondent. That epiphany sucked. That's why I don't want to invest or be a part of movie making, because I love them so much. I don't want to know that they're filmed out of order. I don't want to know that they're not real. And now you're telling me that Netflix, who's a great content provider, doesn't care about the content it provides?
A level playing field, because you take great joy in sucking out all the whimsical yes. fantasy from sports when
you
I watch
really
it
do.
As a fan.
That's what he does. That should be on your business cards. Whimsical fantasy destroyer, David Samson. You danced around 3 pockets of landmines in this conversation.
See ya.